Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you for tuning in today. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy. And waiting in the wings, we've got Anna Banana. And she will also share with us later in the hour her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Until then, we are going to start with our first guest today, and that's David Stein with Prairie Rivers. And hello, David.
Hey, how's it going?
It's doing quite well. It looks like we're going to have a sunny day again. Hopefully we'll get some precipitation later in the week. At least it's in the forecast, so we can only hope. David, you're with Prairie Rivers, and for the listeners who may not be familiar with Prairie Rivers, can you just please describe what Prairie Rivers is and perhaps what your mission is?
Prairie Rivers is a unique nonprofit located right here in Ames. We strive to conserve Central Iowa and Iowa as a whole, natural and cultural resources. So to do that, we work with water quality and wildlife here in Central Iowa, while also managing the historical treasures along the Lincoln Highway here in Iowa that stretches from river to river, border to border.
Great. I know a number of years ago when it was an RC&D, a Resource Conservation and Development Program, which was more or less defunded, but you were able to maintain your survivorship and become a nonprofit. I know I was on the board for a while. Is there still opportunities for folks out in the public to become involved?
Yes. So we are always looking for volunteers to help with our water quality initiatives. So we go out and we measure different water quality factors in local waterways and streams. And moving forward, we're hoping to expand that into monitoring different wildlife. So having people look at what butterflies and bumblebees and wildflowers and other wildlife is right here in Central Iowa. So stay tuned for that. But for now, if people are looking to volunteer, we are always looking for more water quality monitoring, volunteer, people who are just interested.
Okay, that's great to know. Now, we've all been abuzz recently with a discovery that you made while you were out in the field. And that has to do with a bumblebee that we've been looking for, and it's on the threatened or endangered list, I believe. Can you describe what this little critter is?
Yeah, so this is the rusty-patched bumblebee. It is the only bee species on the federal endangered species list, listed as endangered, in the lower 48 contiguous United States. So it is a fascinating little creature, really only located right now in the upper Midwest, so Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Very, very elusive, very hard to take a picture of, very hard to find. And our finding was the first one that we've seen right here in Ames since 2018. So it was a very, very exciting discovery that we were able to find.
So what you're indicating is that Iowa is more or less on the southern extent of the range. So we're trying to determine how far south. Is that right?
Yes. So we are on the edge of their range here in Iowa, and especially right here in Story County. We share a population of rusty patch bumblebees with Boone County, which is their really western extreme. We've noticed that as soon as you cross over the Des Moines River Valley or the Des Moines River Corridor moving west, you won't see any more of these bees moving forward. So we are right on that edge of the range. And on top of that, we also are a very isolated population in Story and Boone counties. You can move a little further east into, say, Iowa City or Cedar Rapids or Waterloo, and you'll be able to see them a little bit more connected. But as soon as you cross more west and get into Story and Boone counties, you won't see a population. So it really makes us isolated, but it also makes us really important for protecting this species moving forward. It just adds a little bit more of a layer of conservation on top of it.
What I was going to ask you was, this would be speculation on your part, but is it a regional, is there a border caused by the river, do you think? Is it a physical barrier, or do you think it's a range with the habitat and perhaps weather and just dispersal of the needs for that little critter?
I'm thinking it's more of a habitat situation. The way that we have found them, not only here in central Iowa, but in Minnesota, in eastern Iowa and Wisconsin, these bees really like those riverside habitats. And on top of that, they really like specific plants found on those riverside habitats. So things like Joe Pieweed, things like mountain mint, things like bee balm, other mint family relatives that are wild. Those are in really, really high abundance here in central Iowa and moving east. Moving out west, as you get more into western Iowa, those might not be as available as they are here. And also on the Des Moines River Valley, that Des Moines River corridor, it's very, very full of varying elevations. It's very rugged terrain. So that might also be an issue. But we're in that stage where we're still trying to figure out what this population's trends and what this population's likes and dislikes are. So there's a lot of unanswered questions that we still need to solve on our end in order to determine what's going on, why their range stops here, and where we can move forward and hopefully reestablish these.
And that's one of the main reasons why we're looking for that bumblebee, is to determine some of those baseline needs and the extent of their range, I would assume, and go from there.
Exactly. There's still a lot of unanswered questions, not only that we have, but even the Fish and Wildlife Service has. They have been working on a lot of different plans and getting all of this available research and all this available data and data points from people like Prairie Rivers and even concerned citizens taking pictures of bees in their backyard are all really important in solving some of these questions.
Now, can you describe briefly for our listeners what to look for when they're trying to check out their bumblebees, and what to look for the rusty patch now, and then how to do this? I mean, do you go up, pick it up and examine it, or how does one go about checking these little guys out?
Yes. So I found that the easiest way is to actually take a video and then look really closely at the video for different characteristics. I found that getting pictures of really any bee is very, very hard. So what I do is I get videos and take screenshots from them. But to describe the rusty patch bumblebee and how it compares to other bee species is, on their back, they have two solid stripes of yellow hair. But in the middle of the bottom stripe is a small patch of rust-colored hair. On the rusty patch bumblebee, that small patch of hair needs to be surrounded by entirely yellow hair. It needs to be fully enclosed in yellow hair. There's another species called the brown-belted bumblebee that has a very similar-looking rust-colored or brown-colored patch of hair, but most of it is bordered by black hair. So that's really what people get confused about. And when people send us pictures of different bees that they find, that's one of the big imposters or lookalikes that we get. So as long as that rusty patch piece of hair is completely surrounded by yellow hair, that means you got a rusty patch. And we've had several people contact us with rusty patch bumblebees with that characteristic. So that's really the easiest way to tell it apart. But again, getting video is the best thing that I've done, and that's my piece of advice.
Okay. You mentioned some of the plants that they prefer. Bee balm, for example. Other terms are horse mint. Monarda, is that the genera? Is that,
yes,
right? Okay.
Monarda fistulosa. That's the one that we have right here in central Iowa. Yeah. Also called wild bergamot.
Okay. And that one, you can see, there's still some in bloom. It's kind of I would call a light purple bloom. It's about knee high, maybe at the greatest, along the roadside plantings and in some of the local prairies. Or folks have been planting more of this in their yard.
Yes, this has become a very, very popular plant. And since it's in the mint family, it likes to spread a little bit. So it's only becoming a lot more common as people keep planting it. But it's one of the best plants that we've seen them on. When we take a look at our records from all across the country or the northern Midwest, that's the number one plant that people have recorded rusty patched bumblebees on.
Okay.
There are others that are less so, but that's number one.
You know, when you mention the mint family, I know out at the plant introduction station, they use honeybees and such for pollinating some of their plants. But I do believe there are some plants that they actually use bumblebees because of the need. Specific plants have flower depths that perhaps the proboscis can't get into. So the bee and the plant have somewhat adapted to one another. Is that your feeling on that?
Yeah, so that's a good point. So bumblebees actually have a specific type of pollination that they can use for certain plants. So what the bumblebee will do is it will go up to the flower and essentially hug it while also vibrating at a specific frequency that it makes with their wings. That will allow the plant to release much more pollen than just collecting it from the top of the plant will do. And bumblebees are really, really good at this. Honeybees, on the other hand, can't do it. So there's a limitation for some plants to only be pollinated by honeybees that bumblebees completely overlook. This is even stretched into some of our crops, things like tomatoes, eggplants, cranberries, blueberries. They all rely on that buzz pollination from bumblebees rather than honeybees.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a specific tool that we can use to get the most pollination service that we possibly can.
You mentioned the Fish and Wildlife Service. Are they the ones who determine whether a species is, as far as listing, are they the determining agency that goes about this?
Yeah, so what they will do is they will take a look at different records that studies have taken, that they've taken. They'll look at their lands that they own throughout the country and try to see how populations differ. So say, from the rusty patch bumblebee, they've declined by about 80% over the last 20 years. So they determined that is a really unsettling loss of the species, and they'll start the process of taking a look and determining if it's threatened, if it's endangered, and what restoration projects are needed to get their numbers back up. But also nonprofits and other concerned citizens can put together a petition to list another species that they might have done research on their own. So a good example of this was the Center for Biological Diversity put together a petition for the American bumblebee, I think earlier this year. They determined that their populations fell by around half. So they put that forward and they submitted that directly to the Fish and Wildlife Service. And then hopefully the service takes it from there and does their own studies.
That sounds interesting. You know, I think there ought to be maybe a campaign started. We need a wild native insect. I raise honeybees, and I know there's been some folk advocates of making the honeybee the Iowa state insect, or the state of Iowa insect, and I would go for a native. Do you think you ought to start a petition on the rusty patch?
That might be a good thing to do. It definitely does raise awareness. Minnesota actually did the rusty patch bumblebee for their state bee, and now you can see it on some license plates, on lottery tickets, on billboards. They really did a huge public relations campaign for it. So it'll get people talking, it'll get people a little more informed about what's going on. And this can extend to butterflies, it can extend to pretty much any wildlife that we have. But that might be a really good way to raise awareness and get some more people concerned about them.
And you mentioned the word concerned. Why should we be concerned about not only the rusty patch, but some of the other? I know you alluded to it somewhat in what they do, but why should we be concerned?
So pollinators really do have that vital role in not only crop and food production, but really just the health of our natural ecosystems. Without them, we won't have our spring, summer, and fall flowers. We won't have any wild fruits. We won't have any seed and nut production. it really extends to just the health of our ecosystem. So without pollinators, we will be really subject to less wild spaces, less plant production, less plant restoration growth, and really just less of nature. So protecting our pollinators not only protects us in the long term and our food production, but it really just helps protect our wild spaces. And the more people that we have concerned about this and really trying to protect these species, the better off I think we all are in terms of just our quality of life.
That sounds great. And David, thank you for joining us today. David Stein with Prairie Rivers. And I think we'll have to buzz into our next subject. So thanks for joining us.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
This next song is truly an anniversary song for the Blue Moon Orchestra, because our fearless leader of the Blue Moon Orchestra over here on the keyboards, founding member, Mr. James Hooker, co-wrote this with me, and it was the first song we ever co-wrote together some 10 years ago. And it just goes to show that you can put your mind anywhere you want your mind to be, because we wrote this song riding in a snowstorm along a Pennsylvania highway and thinking about James's wife, Connie, back in Alabama, and the baby they had on the way, and thinking about springtime in South Texas to the Gulf Coast Highway. Gulf Coast Highway, he worked the rails, he worked the rice fields with their cool dark wells, he worked the oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. The only thing we've ever owned is this old house here by the road. And when he dies, he says he'll catch some blackbird's wing. He will fly away to heaven come some sweet blue vine spring.
She walked the springtime when I was home. The days are sweet, nights were warm. Seasons change, the job had come, the flowers fade. This old house felt so alone when the work took me away. When she dies, she says, she catches some blackbird's wing and she fly away to heaven come some sweet blue bonnet spring.
And that was To the Gulf Coast Highway, written by Nancy Griffith and James Hooker. And that's just part of our week-long tribute to Nancy, who passed on to the other side this past weekend at the age of 68, starting to make me think about my mortality, because we were born the same year. great musician, great writer. With that, we're going to welcome Sam Wormley. Speaking of a great musician and a great sometimes writer, at least when it comes to science programming, he is a co-host with me for Science Bites that you'll hear on Tuesday afternoons between 4:30 and 5 o'clock. Sam, we're welcoming you here, and what do you have for us? I think there's an Ollie class coming up or an Ollie presentation. What can you tell us?
Well, thank you, Mike. I guess you flattered me there, so I will tell you all about Ollie. Ollie is an acronym which stands for Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And Bernard Osher created a foundation and has endowed more than 120 universities that had programs for seniors. Seniors are people that are 50 years and older. He endowed all of those universities so that their programs could go on through thick and thin because of that foundation money. And Iowa State University and Drake University are two of the Osher Lifelong Learning Institutes in Iowa.
Okay. And so how or what is your role in all of this?
Well, my role is as an instructor, and I also serve on the curriculum committee for the local Ollie here. I want to point out that Ollie courses are for everybody, not just people associated with universities. They're for everybody, and all you have to do is become a member for a very small fee and choose the courses you want to take and pay for those, and it's a really good contribution to the quality of life of our community in Central Iowa, and in fact, 20 other states take some of these Ollie programs that we produce.
So these are programs that if you want to continue your educational pursuits, which I think everybody needs to do, I would highly recommend this class or this course offering, not only because I'm a member of the board and an instructor, but I think it's just a great thing. You mentioned 50 and older. Now, what if I was 49 and a half? Are you going to card me at the Zoom door, or how do we go about finding out about how to get signed up?
Some of the people, Mike, that take these classes look like they're pretty darn young, and nope, we don't card anybody, and we don't ask. People are just welcome.
Well, Sam, that's because only their hairdresser knows for sure.
That's true.
So, Sam, can you describe what some of the offerings are for this fall?
Mike, there are actually 52 offerings for this fall.
How about just highlighting a few of those? We don't quite have enough time to go through all 52, and I would assume that if folks are interested, they can go online and look at the catalog.
Well, certainly. Maybe it's better just to talk about what the categories are. There's history, and when I say history, like the women of World War II, corporate leadership toward a zero carbon footprint, diabetes prevention, hidden gems of classical music, stories behind eight highlights in the history of science, just all kinds of things. One thing that should be pointed out is that all of these Ollie classes for the fall are virtual. That means that you need to come in on Zoom to be able to participate in the class. And also in the wintertime, all classes are virtual. And the primary reason is that we're in a pandemic and we want to make sure that everybody is safe. In the wintertime, even if there wasn't a pandemic, our classes would be virtual so that people don't have to drive in the ice and snow and worry about slipping, getting in and out of parking lots and buildings and so on. And maybe it'll be that way for the indefinite future. But the point is that there's a tremendous variety of courses. Currently, they're offered virtually. And in the spring, maybe there'll be a course like watercoloring where you really need to have hands-on participation. Those classes would probably be in person.
And I know that you've taught some basic photography classes in the past. And how would you go about handling that situation? Because I would assume you would have assignments, go out in the field, and then perhaps get together to critique and then go on to the next assignment. How do you do that in a Zoom situation?
Well, Mike, in the last few years, we would have a class, talk about the important principles, share images with each other, and then we would go out as part of the class to a county park or city park and do photography together where we could excite each other, talk to each other. Now, when the pandemic started, all of that changed. And in fact, the last time I taught this class, which was in the spring, there were people from Washington State, Las Vegas, Omaha, Okoboji, Afton, Iowa. There was nobody from Ames. And so we appealed to people from a broad range of locations. And one of the advantages of that is they all had different kinds of terrain and wildlife and fauna and flora, and that really enhanced our sharing of images with each other.
Gosh, that almost sounds like you could have taken a short tour of different parts of the United States all through the courtesy of your OLLI class.
Oh, yes. And the thing about a class like this is that we all learn from each other and give advice to each other. It's a wonderful experience, Mike. This is true of many, many OLLI classes.
So if I were interested and I were underage, I think I would dig up one of my granddad's photos and submit that as my Zoom image and then just take the class incognito, as it were. But if I was interested in signing up, can you review again, where does somebody go to find out information? Have to have a membership, if I remember, an annual membership, but then the fees are really reasonable. We're not going to mention any of those, but the whole point is you can sign up everything online and then join in. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mike. Everybody that wants to learn more about this can just get on their computer and they can go to olli.iastate.edu and you will find all of the interface information, how to register for classes, links to course catalogs, and so on. It's pretty easy. Let me say that again. olli.iastate.edu and you'll wind up with the correct information.
Okay. So, Sam, I know you've been involved for a number of years. You are one of the instructors, and I'm going to put in a plug. If people were to attend one of Sam's classes, I think you'd become a hooked OLLI member and start perusing the catalog just for his classes. But, Sam, why do you do this?
It is really satisfying to bond with the students, to impart information that they appreciate, and to see their smiling faces in the process. It really enriches me as much as it enriches them.
That's great. Sam, thank you for joining us. We're going to go to one of the promos that the instructors actually have 90 seconds to promote their class and tell the potential participants something about that class and why they should take it. So we're going to play the one that you and I put together. And at this time, I will bid you adieu and thanks for joining us. And folks, just remember, this is a great thing to consider signing up, especially in a late fall, winter, when you're inside more. Why not learn a little bit of something and just enjoy learning? We should all continue our learning process.
Hello, Sam Wormley.
Hello, Mike Metz.
Hey, Sam, there's a fall class in OLLI opening, and they've got a slot. It's number 37. I think we ought to do something that's pertinent to science. What do you think?
Hey, Science in the News would be a good program for OLLI. We could have the OLLI members discuss science with us.
Okay, well, do you think that would have to be more than just maybe a one-day class? Maybe how about four or even six? Let's say six.
You know, yes, we could do it for 6 weeks. We could start the 23rd of September, and we could send out science articles ahead of time to the class members, and they'd be all ready to have a discussion as part of class.
Okay, so that's September 23rd. It's a Thursday, and it goes through October 28th, also a Thursday, from 9 to 10:30.
From 9 to 10:30.
Okay.
And we will make the links available for the science articles the day before, and we will have an excellent science discussion.
Okay, but that only means that there's one problem here, Sam.
What's up, Mike?
Well, that means that we'll have to read the articles ahead of time so we know what we're talking about.
Well, actually, we want our students to read the articles ahead of time also.
Right. So they can ask questions
and yes.
participate in the discussion.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Sam.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long. So hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
Well, and that is Our House by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And as the story goes, Graham Nash composed this song for Joni Mitchell. They were having breakfast together one morning on Ventura Boulevard, and she noticed, probably window shopping, a vase that she was really intrigued with. So Graham purchased it for her, and when they went to her house, she was in the process of putting some flowers in it to show them off, and Graham wrote this song. And it's a song that when I was looking for housing as a sophomore off campus, it was a hit then. So with that, I welcome Susan Guiazda from the city of Ames. And hello, Susan. I see you've got a few guests with us today.
I do, but before I get to my guests, I just want to remind everybody that today is Chalk the Walk Day, which is an international day that is celebrated in communities around the world to celebrate positivity, and it's very simple to participate. It simply is chalking messages of joy and positivity around designated areas around the city of Ames. We have chalk at the community center at Roosevelt Park. We've partnered with Story County to offer chalk at the Tedesco Environmental Center. There are many, many places to get the chalk. They're listed on our website, cityofames.org. And just take a few minutes and spread some joy today by chalking something positive on the sidewalks and bringing a little smile to somebody else's face. We have gotten some great messaging. We try to feature that work on our social media pages. So tag us or let us know where your chalk work is at, and we will come photograph it and get it up. It really is a fun event. We've only been doing it for a couple years, but the whole goal is to build community and connect neighborhoods. And our neighborhood liaison, Julie Gould, really has been promoting it. It's been a lot of fun.
What a great way to get some of those budding artists out there to put some friendly, positive graffiti on our sidewalks. I know one of my neighbor kids was actually thinking about doing a hopscotch and putting little messages in the boxes, so I hope they follow through with it. For those of you who don't know hopscotch, you just haven't lived, right, as a kid?
Well, what's amazing is that the messaging and the artwork we've seen really has come from all ages. It's just fun to kind of try on your inner kid and get out there and chalk. Some of the best stuff we've seen has come from amazing adult artists, assisted sometimes by children, or just our, as you said, our budding young artists who just have so much creativity. It's really awesome to see. And another effort to build strong neighborhoods and community, my guests today are going to talk about an outreach effort that the city has partnered with the university to implement. That is also this week. I have Sarah Van Meetren, our building official, along with Joel Hochstein from Iowa State University. And they're going to talk about a good neighbor program that is still relatively new. But the idea is, again, to build those bonds and connections with our neighbors in the campus town area.
Welcome to Local Talk. Sarah, maybe you can start off for us.
Good morning. We're happy to be here. We're excited. So tomorrow, this will be the second time we've been able to do this. We didn't get to do it last year, but we did it in 2019, and we went door to door in the area surrounding campus and welcomed the students to Iowa State with several different messages. So I don't recall, Joel, maybe you can help me how it came about, but I think that I was thinking of doing something, and then the Ames Police Department said, oh, wait, I think ISU is thinking of doing something, and it became this coordinated effort between ISU and the city to try to welcome students back. So there's a lot of different messages we have. You know, we want students to be safe when they, if they choose to party, to do it in a safe manner. And then to understand that there's codes and ordinances that they need to follow, as off-campus housing is a little bit different than on-campus. Many aren't aware that there's ordinances when they move to a new town. And three, I think just that we're here for them and to use us as a resource. So we're pretty excited about it.
What's your feeling on that, Joel? It sounds like it's a really great connection between ISU and the city of Ames.
Like Sarah said, we've really leveraged the great partnerships that we have built between the city and the university for a Good Neighbor campaign, a campaign like this, where we're leveraging both City of Ames staff, we're leveraging university staff and resources to go out into the community and chat with our off-campus, both students and non-students who are living in our single-family and duplex rentals in near-campus neighborhoods. So I think, Sarah, I was also trying to think of or kind of all this was going on, how exactly this all happened. And I think you're right. I think generally at the time, if I remember right, council was also having conversations about applying overlays in near campus neighborhoods. This also was happening kind of at the time that the state, I believe, preempted some of the rental pieces, components to the city code. And we were hearing things from the community about what was happening and some of our near campus neighborhoods and some of their experiences. And so it was natural for us, I think, to outreach through our partners at Ames Police. And then we got wrapped up with Sarah. And I think this has been a really great opportunity for us to really get out and educate folks and be proactive on the front end when folks are, you know, really just now starting their leases for the year.
This sounds to me like a situation where you've taken and modified what we used to call the neighborhood welcoming the new neighbor who's moved in. Or, believe it or not, I was a little kid once, and I know when we would get, my dad transferred a lot because of the way his job was set up. When we entered a new community, we'd have the welcome wagon woman or guy come by and welcome us to the community and point out some of the very things that you're talking about and make us feel like, you know, we were part of the neighborhood already. And it seemed like that was the one great thing about moving, because as kids, we'd seem like we'd get little treats. So do you have little treats?
We do have little treats. We have some Sour Patch Kids that we'll be giving out as part of that. So
that's great.
We were reading your mind.
Yeah, I guess so. So I might just have to move so I get a little treat. So
come on in.
What do you anticipate as far as how many folks are you going to be able to try to reach out for? What, over the length of time here in the next couple of weeks as students are moving into the neighborhoods? Gosh, that starts next week in earnest, if I recall. How many folks do you have involved in this, and who are you going to try to reach out to?
So we're looking at hitting about 286 houses tomorrow afternoon. And we have about five groups with four to five different representatives in each group. And we've tried to mix the groups up with Ames Fire, Ames Police, ISU Police, and then Student Conduct. So we are well represented, and we have, I would guess, about 20 people to do this blitz. And then school starts next week, and I think Joel still has some other events, some other messaging that will go out over the next few weeks as students come in as well.
Okay, Joel, can you cover some of those messages for us?
Yeah, sure. Well, we've partnered with a lot of the same group, Ames Police Department, our Office of Student Wellness, and others, to come up with some harm reduction messaging around alcohol consumption or parties off campus. And so you'll see that messaging going out through university, social media, and I think you'll also see it go out through some of the city's social media as well, through the police department, certainly. So we just want students to, consider if they're going to socialize. We know they're going to socialize. Humans are social beings. To do that in ways that aren't going to increase harm to themselves or harm to others or disruption to the neighborhood. And so those messages are all kind of wrapped up in this central message of really being a good neighbor and what that means in our community.
That sounds great. It kind of welcomes folks to the community, lets you know that with some of those freedoms, you still have responsibilities because we are a community. And I'm sure glad that you came to KHOI so that we can spread this word to the folks in our community. And we sure hope for success for you folks. Joel, how does one contact you if they have questions? I know, Sarah, we can go through the city website to contact you, but how about you, Joel?
Sure. You can reach me via email if you'd like, joelh@iastate.edu. You can also reach me through the Student Conduct website. You can find our staff page there and email me directly, or you can call our front desk, 515-294-1020, and ask for me. And I can provide assistance where I'm able.
Okay, I'll make sure we get that information out for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we close for today?
Mike, I'd just like to add that this informational blitz is just one of many tools that the university and the city have to do outreach to new students. I am moving my daughter into Iowa State today. I have two kids at Iowa State. And I think sometimes as community members, we forget that just a few months ago, my daughter was in high school, and making that transition to college sometimes comes with a lot of expectations that kids aren't always really aware of. Sometimes behavior is just simply an education opportunity, and that's what going to school is all about. So I think we need to kind of remember to be patient and to be educators ourselves as we transition into a fall, and we hope it's a great fall for all of our students this year.
That's great. It's just another way to welcome individuals, make them feel somewhat at ease, at the same time promoting some of the responsibilities that the give and take. And so we all get along. That's a great reminder, Susan. And yeah, I'm sure it hits home with you, especially this year. Good luck in that venture, and I'm sure our listeners will reach out and welcome the individuals as well. Thank you, Joel. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Susan. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Live
6 foot
Well, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, you're here with us now, and what have you got to share with us and our listeners for Tune In Tuesday?
It is Tune In Tuesday, as I try to tempt you to listen to KHOI. You listeners out there, stay tuned, because let me ask you this, Mike, if you know about this. What is common between a Ravina Tandon, a Narendra Modi, a Gullibo, and a Happy Holly?
There's a plant involved.
No. These are all the funky mocktail names for exotic drinks that you're going to serve your guests at your mocktail party that I found online. Now, these names are subtly designed to give people hints regarding the composition of the drink based on an important or popular notion associated with the person, situation, or place after which it is named. They will have your guests wondering and wanting for more as they try these delicious mocktail drinks. Now, so speaking of wondering and wanting for more, tune into one of our favorite KHOI programs as the host, Chef Donna and Farmer Lana, will celebrate summer by discussing picnics and sharing non-alcoholic mocktail recipes. And maybe a couple of the recipes will sneak in a little bit of rum or tequila, but not sure, so you'll have to tune in and find out. And maybe they'll even have some of the mocktails I just mentioned. I don't know. Again, you have to tune in.
Anna, I've got to tell you, you know, with the extracts and things used in the in those beverages, there is a plant involved. So I wasn't that far off. I was just a plant in the audience to heckle you.
Right. And look at me. I'm like all, no, wrong answer. Well, what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show, who will be talking about mocktails, and they're right and won't make you feel like you're wrong? It's the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, and they talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor when on Tuesdays at noon and then repeated again at 7 p.m. Now, Mike Matt, somebody asked if I could explain what Pi Day was again, and I told him I don't want to repeat myself.
Jeez. At infinitum, now, huh?
Yeah, well, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show is an encore repeat presentation. So they, again, they'll be sharing their mocktail recipes and celebrating summer picnics. Oh, dear, I'm repeating myself.
Well, we'll give you a 3.14 for that.
So, now, Mike, here's another one. A proton and a neutron walk into a bar. They both order drinks. The neutron asks the bartender, how much for the drink? And the bartender says,
No charge,
exactly. So I know that you and Sam Wormley are not going to charge us to listen to Science Bites today at 4:30, but what will we learn if we tune in today?
Well, we are finishing up our Women in Science series with the last episode, and then we're kind of going to probably go to the dark corners of the universe after that. That's just a little hint of what might come the following week. But for now, we're just wrapping up the Women in Science. However, I have recently discovered a new woman scientist, and if we have time, I might do a minute interview with her, or at least she may appear. So who knows?
Yeah, that ain't happening. So after listening to Mike Metz and Sam Wormley and share what they know about science and women in science with listeners, you can later tune in at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. We will spend our time with a very special guest who has a connection to the KHOI family. So Marianne Mae Russell and her twin sister were born in Omaha, Nebraska, and lived with their birth mom for a period of time before they moved in with foster parents. When Marianne and her sister were 2 years old, they were adopted by a family living in Ames, Iowa. Marianne, who is now 27 years old, loves being adopted and sharing her story to let others know that there are wonderful families out there who are waiting to adopt wonderful kids. Now, who are these wonderful parents of Marianne? Well, they are Mary Jane Brotherson and Tom Russell. Tom, of course, is the host of All Things Piano. Now, I won't be playing feature Brahms Opus 119 along with the classical song Pennies from Heaven, from All Things Piano's latest show. But, Mike Metz, what do you think I'll be playing during Heart to Heart Messages?
Let me think. Oh, I know, I know. Love is a Many Splendored Thing.
What do you think? Well, that gives you a hint of whether or not Mike Metz is correct. But you can find out if he was right, which you know he's not, by tuning in to KHOI tonight at 8:30 for my interview with Marianne. Now, Mike Murphy, have you ever heard of that Happy Holly mocktail?
I have not.
It is delicious. This multicolored bright drink, the passion fruit juice in the drink, matches the level of passion and enthusiasm at your party as the guests are ready to take on the dance floor. Yep, they'll be doing, even though it's a mocktail, they'll be dancing. The edible glitter is the expression of joy and fondness of your party's colorful vibe. So is this the kind of vibe that you'll be going on for, you name it, this Thursday? Will listeners have a happy holly time?
People will have reason to celebrate. It'll be a joyous occasion, especially for the older folks, because it's going to be yet another new music from old folks for 2021. So, for example, David Crosby, we heard Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young earlier. David Crosby just turned 80 the other day, and he's got a new album out, and we'll be hearing some of that.
Mike, did that go from 78 to 33 and a third because of the age?
Did you know I just discovered the other day, 33 plus 45 equals 78?
No kidding. Wow, what a revolution. All in one groove.
Well, you know what I'm thinking is that while you're listening to You Name It this Thursday, people can sign up for the Ollie classes.
Yeah, it is music to sign up to.
Yeah, I agree. So you can listen to You Name It this Thursday. And what time do you listen to You Name It this Thursday?
That's from 2 to 4 p.m.
That's right. On KHOI. Now, this is for Pat, even though he's not there, but did you hear about the picnic without beverages? It was so depressing. Well, what would be depressing if we didn't tune in to listen to KHOI to great programming like All Things Piano with Tom Russell this morning after local talk, the Donna Lottie Kitchen Show, who will give us beverage ideas for our picnic. You name it this Thursday, well, we'll be grooving out with glitter and glamour and older songs and everything else. Community Bookshelf, heart-to-heart messages, and Science Bites, to just name a few of your listening options to make your day a great one. Now, what was Yogi Bear looking for in the picnic basket?
His ticket, so he didn't go to the St. Louis Zoo when the ranger caught him.
Right, no. Just the bare necessities. So it is unbearable. But I do know that it is. My time is up. So back to you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Anna. And Anna, I want you to go to, what is our theme song?
Well, our theme song is always as backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and All Things Piano at 9 a.m. You want me to keep going?
Yes, please.
Okay, remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
we'll see you again on the radio. The radio.